has begun. It is 10 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone. We're going to be welcoming Mike Shelby very shortly. Chris from Michigan called in about the concept of legalizing drugs. We talked a little bit about that. What's your comment? What's your take on the legalization of drugs, Chris?
No, this is my idea for it. Honestly, the whole purpose was to legal, basically outlaw everything and later on. But we have a large section of the population who are hopelessly addicted, right?
Yep.
Well, legalize it, not for the fact that we're going to tax it. Because if you tax it, then you can never get rid of it because now we're addicted to that tax structure. Uh-huh. No, we're going to legalize it, make it as cheap as a ballpoint pen. That way, everybody who cannot regulate themselves are going to be OD'd within a couple of weeks instead of stealing everything that isn't nailed down to pay for more drugs. And then you have a media campaign combined with that to demonize drug users. I mean, really demonize them. You are the worst part of the family. That's why nobody talks to you, sort of deal. No, they're not gangbangers who are legal. No, that makes them mysterious, outlaws, the bad boys. No. You're a junkie. That's what you always show. And then once, probably it takes a couple of years, but after that point, you know, bam, just shot the system. It's illegal. Because by that point, most of the people are pretty much done with it at that point. And at that point, anybody who's not on board, they're out of it. But, okay, anyway, I was when you were talking, I was thinking about the Epstein list, right?
Right.
They can't use their blackmail material right now. Because they're saying it don't exist. They're saying it don't exist. So if all of a sudden, this person gets out of the line, and now all of a sudden there's videos. Wait a second, I thought you said there was nothing. Where else is there? There's no way it's just this one person that spoke out of line. Who else is it? They try to trickle it out on one person right now to keep them in line. It's going to open a floodgate. So unless they're going to release it all and everybody gets burned, or they just got to let people run around and get a little bit out of line right now. So I think this is the time where politicians, even if you have been blackmailed, you've done some horrible things, do the right thing now. This is your chance.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know too much about that. I mean, that sort of coincides with the idea that maybe Trump is, got a hold of the blackmail material and is now using it to try to set things right. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. And look, there is a list. And so them saying that there isn't is just absurd on the face of it. And I don't know. Being exposed as blatant hypocrites and liars hasn't stopped them before. So I don't know if it would stop them now from, releasing blackmail material or whatever else. But interesting idea. Interesting idea about the drugs, too. It almost reminds me of Soma from Brave New World, right, where you would have people who weren't fit for continuing, in their society were just sort of given Soma so they could drift off into LSD-style, dreamscapes for the rest of their lives. That's what happens to the main character's mom, right? Interesting idea. I'm open to all creative solutions to these problems. Now, we have about a minute left for the break. I want to go to Eris in Wisconsin. Eris, you're on the air. About a minute left.
Hey, Harrison. I just wanted your thoughts on the wild worldwide anti-white breeding programs going on and, like, what the U.S. would be like without the multipolar LGBTQ rainbow, chemicals in the food and water and pesticides making the humans gay, and, like, the Illuminati and Zionist anti-white breeding agenda, interracial melting pot thing.
All right, well, let me respond to we don't have much time. The natural progress of humanity is the more advanced and civilized you are, the lower your birth rate is. And that's not a bad thing because it also lowers your death rate or, increases your lifespan. So there's sort of an equilibrium that takes place where the birth rate lowers, but the death rate lowers and the population can reach equilibrium. If that had been allowed to, continue, that's actually fine. You don't need, 12 babies a family. If all the babies survive, you only need like two or three. So what we should be doing is trying to export civilization and, progress to other nations instead of having a Ponzi scheme that's predicated on infinite growth that requires a, continually expanding population that then predicates migration. And so you've got the third world in, destitution, making tons of babies, moving to the first world to replace them. It's just a washing machine. Dragon attacks from skies up above, but Alex holds magic inside of his glove. He mixes the pulse.
putting the power of conversation into the caller's hands. You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. My guest is Mike Shelby. He is the author of The Area Intelligence Handbook and is an expert on low-intensity conflict, irregular warfare, and the gray zone. He spent parts of every year from 2006 to 2011 deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan as an intelligence NCO and intel contractor. You can find his website at grayzoneresearch.substack.com, grayzonestore.com. You can also follow him on X at grayzoneintel. And, of course, the book, again, is Area Intelligence Handbook, and it tells you everything you need to know about gathering your own area intelligence to maximize your survivability in any sort of disaster, be it natural or political or any other circumstance where you may have to organize and resist. Mike Shelby, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Harrison, good to see you again.
Very good to see you. And of course, your name was at the top of my list as soon as I heard about the ambush at the ICE facility in Texas. And it seems like you called this, you know, down to the week almost. We've been talking to you about what the left's response to the Trump administration was going to be throughout the Tesla dealerships and all that stuff. And you always said it will be this summer and you'll start seeing these attacks on ICE facilities and stuff like that. Again, if people forget, and this is the craziest thing about this, is it's such an insane attack and it's like nobody cares. Like, this attack, as far as I'm concerned, should be the top story for like weeks. 10 charged after ambush at Texas ICE detention centers. You had an armed gang of Antifa literally ambushing and firing at federal officers in a guerrilla militia attack. Lay out for us what this attack means to you and where you think it goes from here, Mike.
Yeah, sure. Certainly. Thanks for the opportunity. So last year I started just looking at these far left groups, and they were clearly smaller, and they're having problems gaining traction like they did back in 2016 and 2017 into 2020. And so I started just telling people my outlook, which is smaller but more violent. So there's not as many of them active, but they will be pushed to do more violent things as a result. And yeah, 100%. ICE was obviously the target. I started saying that last year because ICE is visible. They're out around in the community. Their facilities are, you know, publicly accessible, at least to the front. So what happened is on the 4th of July, you had a group of, I believe they now say it's 12 far left militants approached this Prairie Land detention facility in Alvarado, Texas, which is right outside Fort Worth. And a group of them go to the parking lot and they begin vandalizing vehicles and a guard shack there. Remember, this is an ICE facility.
Right.
And according to the DA, they were trying to draw law enforcement out, and they were successful in doing that. They're also shooting off fireworks towards this facility. There's not a lot of details in the indictment, but this is roughly the string of events. And so Alvarado PD shows up. A couple of unarmed ICE officers do come out and try to figure out what's going on. And at that moment, I think around 11 or 11:30, you have two shooters open fire with AR-15s and shooting one of the Alvarado police officers. Something happens. They break contact. One of those rifles probably had a misfeed, and so probably couldn't clear it. And so they dropped their rifles and they ran away. And seven of them ended up being arrested by law enforcement, which was very quickly swarming this area looking for these shooters. Another guy was arrested right in the vicinity, and he was arrested with two additional AR-15s. One of the people who was arrested, who apparently did not shoot, also had a broken down upper and lower receiver AR-15 in his backpack. They were also armed with pistols. So this attack, A, it could have been much worse.
Right.
But B, there were so many ARs here. I wonder if some of them didn't get there and just kind of chicken out and say, well, we actually don't want to do this. But you know, this is extremely significant because this is the first time where you actually have this large of a coordinated kind of phased, because there's two phases to this, draw the law enforcement presence and then open fire. I think this is a high watermark, you know, I would say for armed violence by the far left, for sure.
Yeah, because again, this wasn't a protest that got out of hand. This wasn't, you know, even just like people throwing rocks at cops. This was a coordinated, planned action where you had, you know, activity to draw the police out, other people stationed there to fire at them. I mean, you talk about a military operation. It might not have been the most effective, as you point out. It could have been a hell of a lot worse. I mean, but it almost seems like this was dipping the toe in the water. It seems like they'll have learned lessons that they'll employ next time. And I don't see any sign that this isn't going to happen again. I think it's just a matter of time. Obviously, the ICE facility in Portland has been the site of continual violence and, you know, so-called protests. But, you know, it's really just a militarized encampment outside the ICE facility where you've got Antifa going around with guns, checking people's IDs as if they're the lawful authority in the area. I mean, I don't see any sign that this is going to stop. Luckily, the people involved in Alvarado have been arrested, including one of the guys who was on the run for a while, Benjamin Hanil Song. But these guys are well-known operatives in North Texas, Antifa groups. They've been caught on video intimidating and assaulting people outside of drag shows and things like that. So, you know, do you know what is being done with these guys? I mean, you'd have to think that this nucleus of actors would just be the starting point. The investigation would spiral out to their communications and who they're coordinating with and maybe who they're being funded by. Do you know anything in terms of how that process would look?
Well, I don't exactly, but as I understand it, they had arrested 12 individuals, and I think that now they've arrested 15. So maybe three or four additional co-conspirators who, to my understanding, were not at the site of the shooting. So, you know, I imagine first things first, they're going through the charges and legal process. One of the blog posts about this, because you know what ends up happening is there's an attack or there's some kind of demonstration or event like this, and then one of the anarchist militant blogs, the revolutionary left blogs, will start to comment on it. And one of the things they said is that they are not, the alleged assailants are not cooperating with law enforcement. But there's just so much data. We know they pulled cell phone location data to track the sequence of events leading up to the attack. I'm sure there's some leverage going on where they say, well, we'll drop your charges, or maybe you won't go to prison for 99 years. Maybe you'll just go to prison for 5 years if you cooperate with us. So I'm sure there's that kind of jockeying happening. But, you know, in terms of building out this network, I would really like to see this, because this whole DFW Antifa network is quite large, you know, and you don't really think of like Dallas Fort Worth as, it's definitely not ground zero, but they have been active for a long time. And now, you know, there's that John Brown Gun Club, which at least a handful, maybe all of these people were members of the John Brown Gun Club. This deserves a lot more attention because these groups are all across the United States. And I'll just say one thing. There's 100% chance we will continue to see armed violence against federal law enforcement, specifically ICE or Customs and Border Protection or DHS. Something like this requires, to be successful, requires a lot more planning. And that makes it an exponentially larger challenge to do. So I really do think small scale attacks involving one or two shooters is far more likely going forward than another relatively large scale ambush like this.
Yeah, and again, it's just shocking that this isn't being treated like a bigger deal. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if most people hadn't even heard that this happened. And it's like you have an armed cabal ambushing federal agents and firing at them and injuring them. How is this not the biggest story? How are we not getting daily updates? How is there not a special counsel, you know, or special committee being established in Congress where they're saying this is just the beginning? This is just a, you know, what's come up over the surface, but the iceberg underneath is huge. How is this not being treated as a bigger deal? And what do you think that means, that this isn't being treated as a bigger deal? Why aren't they making hay out of this and using this as evidence that we need to go after these guys? I mean, what do you think is behind the lack of awareness and intensity when it comes to this response?
Sure. Well, this is the same weekend as the catastrophic flooding around San Antonio. Sure. So that really dominated the news cycle. But I'll tell you, I checked on CNN 72 hours after the attack, like 3 or 4 days, and CNN still hadn't covered it. There's nothing on the website about a shooting at an ICE facility. So obviously it's counter to their narrative.
That's wild.
And which is, you know, which is one big reason why, you know, they don't want to cover it. But this really is, I mean, this is, it should be national news, and it should be, we should be having a national debate on, look, ICE has deported illegals for, since their inception over 20 years ago. We've been deporting illegals for a long time since then. Why is it now a problem? And why do Democrats feel the need, and not just Democrats, but mostly people on the left, why do they feel the need to characterize these people doing their jobs, fulfilling federal law, which has been established since the beginning of this country? Why now? Why is this such a big problem? You know, the acting director of ICE was on Meet the Nation on Sunday, and he asked, what do you attribute these violent attacks on ICE to? And he said it's political rhetoric. It's politicians essentially speaking as if they just, that ICE is doing things to justify violent resistance or violent attacks against them. And so and then the other side, you have the Trump administration. I don't know why the DOJ is not forcing this issue and really, you know, for lack of a better term, exploiting it, because this has been a problem. I mean, literally since 2015, 2016, you've had these militant leftists running around, assaulting people, killing people. We should be having this discussion. And I really don't know why the administration is not making this a bigger deal.
It is baffling, because, again, it's not even like, well, they could be doing stuff behind the scenes. It's like, no, this needs to be a public-facing operation. You need to be telling people, this is the threat that we're facing, and here's how we're dealing with it. I don't want to hear about investigations behind the scenes, or don't worry, they'll be charged. It's like, no, this needs to be a public conversation so people have awareness of why we need to go after these guys. And again, I think back to the shooting in Portland of Jay, where they jumped out from behind a wall and shot him in the chest, and Vice later went and interviewed the guy. And I mean, like you say, this is not a totally new phenomenon. There have been these Antifa networks committing violent crime, and at the very least justifying and helping, you know, contribute to violent crime across the country, and it's never gotten attention. Jerry Nadler still says Antifa doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. So it's just, you know, random groups of individuals combining their, you know, might to shoot ICE officers. It's just insane this is going on. So what's next, Mike? Where does it go from here? You said you expect to see more small scale stuff. I was thinking the opposite. I was thinking, you know, once you start seeing groups of 10 to 15 people assaulting ICE agents, that's only going to grow. You think it's going to go the other way, though? You think the violence is going to continue, but it's probably not going to see more operations of this size?
Well, I look at baseline. You could be correct. I'm not sure exactly what these people were thinking, but a group of 10, 12 plus individuals laying an ambush at a hard target facility, which is what this ICE facility was, a hard target. That's above baseline. Maybe this does become normalized, and maybe this group says, look, let's go do something large, catastrophic, something that can't be ignored, and maybe we will kick it off across the country. Because that's one thing the LA riots did. People in Portland, and well, Portland was already ongoing, but people in Philadelphia and New York and other places, they saw the LA riots and they said, yeah, actually, maybe we can go out and riot against ICE. So maybe that was the motivation there. Maybe they thought, hey, let's do something big and spectacular, and we'll ignite the revolution. I mean, these people are really inherently revolutionary. But I just start at a baseline. So smaller scale shootings, maybe against softer targets, going after off duty or ICE agents that are not in groups would be a much softer target. That has to be a possibility. One thing they will absolutely 100% continue to do is arson attacks. There was just a guy yesterday in New York City. He turned himself in for being responsible for burning 10 cop cars back on June 12th. He's a pro-Palestinian, far-left militant. He jumped a fence. I did the math. I read through the indictment and did the math. He spent about $30 on these fire starters, and he put them on the tires of these NYPD, New York Police Department cruisers and unmarked vehicles, and he caused $800,000 in damage.
Ooh.
Which is an extremely high ROI.
Yeah.
And he also got away. Well, he got away for a time. Back earlier, I think it was earlier this year, Something very similar happened in Portland, Oregon. You have some Antifa militants cut through the fence of a Portland Police Bureau parking lot. They go and they torch 17 cop cars. I did not hear a peep about this in mainstream news, obviously. And I hate to be the guy that says, well, if the shoe were on the other foot, yeah, okay. You know, we all know. But it's just not getting the attention this deserves. That kind of stuff will 100% continue. Arson is a mainstay of far-left militancy, and it's absolutely going to continue. So, point is, this is not going to slow down. This is going to accelerate. Also, Tom Homan said, ICE is getting ready to flood the zone in New York City. We will probably see what happened in LA happen in New York City when ICE, if ICE actually does go in surge operations in New York City.
Might be a little different than New York City. I think New York City cops take their jobs a little bit more seriously than the LA cops do, at least from my experience.
Sure. Well, I mean, the other side of this, though, you know, New York City is a tier one city for far left militancy. So, yeah. You know, it's not so much the cops won't be involved. But even Eric Adams said, that's fine. ICE can come in here and go after the worst of the worst. Don't go after common everyday, you know, Margarita, who's a gardener or a dishwasher or whatever. But ICE is going to go. They're called collateral arrests. If ICE encounters them, they will be arrested. So there will at least be protests. And whenever there's a large group of people, you kind of create the conditions for something more. So I fully expect this to happen in New York City.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's one of those things where it sucks because it's like you want to tell the left, you've got to stop doing this because you're only paving the way for tyranny. Like, I don't necessarily want the government, you know, doing what might be necessary to do to get these Antifa militants. But, you know, you see the danger that they pose. And, you know, as you point out, I think you're right about the soft targets. And we have stories like this from the 11th of July. Anarchists and rioters in Portland illegally dox ICE officers and federal law enforcement. Right. And doxing is giving out the personal information about them. So, you know, when you're talking about the planning sessions of Antifa, it would be a lot more seductive to go after some ICE agent at home while he's asleep at his kid's baseball game than at a hard target like an ICE facility where they're all uniformed and you know, armed. And in fact, we saw, I don't think it was a targeted thing, but it just a coincidental thing that the Honduran or Guatemalan immigrant in New York City got in a gunfight with a CBP officer. And I imagine maybe part of that is just because the CBP officer is on guard and knows that he could very well be a potential target for assassination like this. So I think you're right. And I think, you know, if you've got groups of people sharing the identity of federal agents and they start targeting them at home or in their personal life, you're going to see a crackdown and mass surveillance and all this sort of the tyrannical measures that would be necessary to stop this activity from happening. Because we have the capability of doing it. It's just not compatible with the free society. So, I mean, we're really headed down a dangerous road here, aren't we?
Yeah, I share that concern. Anytime you have expansion of federal authorities, especially for surveillance, of course, you do run the risk. If it's used by one person, it's going to be used by the next. And, you know, Palantir's making this national database of citizens. And while I support that to a degree, if it's going to help the deportation efforts and help find people who should not be in this country, you know, I support it. On the flip side, who knows how that's going to be used next. And, you know, I agree with you. You know, just one point on this, Harrison, that is probably what, at some level, that's probably what some leftists want.
Right.
They do want to push the Trump administration into what may be perceived as an overreaction, push them towards more authoritarian measures, get them to build and start running certain programs. You know, maybe something like, and this may be an extreme example, but something like the COINTELPRO that FBI ran for, you know, mid-50s to the early 70s.
Yep.
Because when they do, that it's like the self-licking ice cream cone. The left is violent. The Trump administration responds. And then the left says, oh, look, we told you this guy was a dictator. Yep. And now he's doing dictator things. And now let's start bringing more people into the movement. So I share that concern, and that absolutely is a risk.
Yeah, and then of course you can see where, you know, if it's not effective, if he implements, you know, sort of the more heavy-handed operation to shut it down, which may be necessary, but if it's not successful and they're able to win politically, Then they come back and go, "Hey, these Republicans, you know, or you know, Trump and the MAGA, they're tyrants. Look at what they did, you know, to our poor innocent Antifa activists. So therefore, you know, we have an excuse to go even further." I mean, it's just a feedback loop that we don't want a part of. Or if we are going to have to be involved in it, it's the measures have to be effective. You have to be so effective that Antifa actually gets rounded up, their funding mechanisms actually get rounded up, the networks are actually dismantled, so that you know you can't have them come back and get retribution for your lawful activities. It's a very dangerous situation we find ourselves in. Again, my guest is Mike Shelby. Follow him on X at Gray Zone Intel. That's GRAY Zone Intel. GrayZoneResearch.substack.net. That's Gray Zone with an A. GrayZoneResearch.substack.com and GrayZoneStore.com to follow the advancing, the accelerating activity of Antifa. Again, the Portland story continues to just fester up there. Multiple arrests after violent mob attacks Portland ICE facility with fireworks and knives. Again, we don't expect this to slow down anytime soon. Have you seen anything from the Republicans that gives you hope that they're taking this threat seriously?
Well, nothing overt. Irrational optimism says that much more is being done beneath the threshold of what's observable. So, you know, obviously I do hope something more is being done. I'm a little bit concerned, frankly. You know, maybe I shouldn't be that optimistic. But, you know, I think the top administration from or top priority for the administration right now is obviously going after illegal immigrants. And I don't, you know, that the resource demands from that are going to last for years. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Now, maybe once ICE ramps up, you know, they're in the process of hiring 10,000 new ICE agents and personnel. Maybe that can alleviate some resources, free up some resources from, you know, FBI and other places to go after, you know, these networks. But, you know, this is not an overnight thing. The other thing too is state and local law enforcement has a huge role to play in this. This does not have to be a federal response.
Right.
Portland's problem is Portland's problem. And there's obviously no political will to do a lot of anything about that. Although we have seen, starting probably mid last year, we actually have seen some new tactics, basically counterinsurgency tactics, being adopted by Portland police, Seattle police, and other places.
Well, we are very much in a low-level intensity civil war, and Mike Shelby's got his finger on the pulse. Thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
Thank you, Harrison.
Ladies and gentlemen, James O'Keefe was here in studio last week. He was on the last hour, and I forgot to give him methylene blue until the last 30 minutes, but he was going on Owen. So I asked him on air, take it now, I'm not going to say what it does, and tell us honestly what your response is. And it was, quite frankly, pretty amazing.
So the crew just reminded me that James O'Keefe has not tried methylene blue, or they asked me to ask him. He has it, doesn't know what it is, but he's so nice and trusting, he just took it. It's actually cyanide, James. No, seriously.
Trying to poison me.
I'm joking, you know, it's really good for you. It takes 30 minutes to hit. It's not a stimulant, but it creates mitochondrial function and skips the oxidative process two levels or three levels in the cells. Usually takes 30 minutes to hit. You're on Owen at 4. Just please, Owen, talk to Owen. Ask if it hit you, what you felt. And if you didn't, we're going to put it on air, and you'll be the only guest that hasn't. So slam the rest of your medicine.
You got it.
So you're asking what the methylene blue is. It is something RMK Jr. pushes. It's something I've known about for years. But we've got the best, and it is amazing what it does to your body.
All right. I look forward to that.
Sometimes it hits in 15 minutes. You got to let us know what you feel.
Wait. I've been drinking it for about 10 minutes, so we'll see.
You just started drinking it about 2 minutes ago.
I finished the rest of it.
20 minutes later.
I just took it. I took a lot of it, and I would say it was the effect on me was light sensations. It was increased light perception. That's what happened to me.
The pixels of the world around you, of the simulation,
like enhanced a little bit? Enhancing my eyes when a light, and I woke away, just a bit of enhancement perception there.
But then after he talked about his eyesight getting clearer, I got reminded by the crew that I've had callers about this effect, and there's actually medical literature out there.
I've got glaucoma. My vision has been crap for the last 20 years.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's perfect now.
What?
Yeah.
How long have you been taking methylene blue?
5 days. After 3 days, perfect vision.
No kidding.
Depth perception's back, and I don't have to hold my phone at my hip to read it.
Wow.
Like, it's crazy.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that, man.
This stuff is crazy amazing, and the medical research shows that.
It clears the brain fog, where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
Yeah! I mean, it's so good, it's scary. It's just amazing. So yes, it really does work. It varies person to person, but it's amazing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. I must say that it does a damn good job.
99% of people that take it have between moderate to just insanely good effects. So good for your whole body.
Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now. I'm a practicing dentist, so I have more patients to treat coming up. So I'm always looking for that afternoon boost without the slump.
With this, it's like in your head where you're like, you can feel it. Your body's a little tingly, but you're just more aware of what's going on.
This stuff kicked in, and it, like, instantly I just felt like this weird meditative energy. I don't know how to explain it. The stuff's new to me, but I like it. Methylene Blue works for me.
I would definitely recommend the Alex Jones Methylene Blue here. It's great stuff, so thank you, Alex. Keep it coming.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water? Methylene Blue. Mel Gibson also praised Methylene Blue on Joe Rogan recently.
This stuff works, man.
But whatever you do, do your own research, talk to your physician, and then get the very best medical-grade Methylene Blue supplement out there at thealexjonesstore.com. We have a limited-time sale until next Tuesday, the 29th, where you get one bottle of Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com and get a second bottle free right now. The limited time offer at thealexjonesstore.com. Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of The American Journal for today's program. We're going to go out to your calls here momentarily, but we got some very interesting news. Some very interesting developments in the international front. Just a few hours ago, ABC reports Zelensky faces major anti-corruption protests as Ukraine prepares for Russia talks. I actually put a video in there, guys. We can go to this protest so you can see. The president defended new measures curbing the independence of two agencies. And here you see the square in Ukraine where this protest is gathered. And it is a lot of people. There's a lot of people there protesting against Zelensky for the first time since the war began all those years ago. That was interesting. The camera pans over and you can see the person's phone filming. It bizarrely looks like the Ukraine flag with the yellow glows underneath and the blue sky above. Kind of symbolic, that. See right there? Doesn't that look like the Ukraine flag? Or maybe the Estonian flag a little bit more. Regardless, this is a major show of discontent from the Ukrainian people who have been really kept under the thumb of Zelensky and his goons since the war began, basically making it illegal for them to express opposition to the war and eradicating, you know, anti-Zelensky protesters or media outlets, that is, shutting them down forcibly or forcing the shutdown of political parties that opposed him. But now Trump's in charge and USAID got defunded. And suddenly it looks like maybe the repressive measures that the Ukrainian people have been under and the psychological manipulation that's been coordinated from American agencies might not be there anymore. Could be a coincidence, but I see an alignment temporally that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. You withdraw the USAID funding. You no longer have the thousands of dollars to pay to media outlets in Ukraine to spread positive messages. And suddenly their inclination for subservience goes by the wayside. And suddenly some of those anti-Zelensky ideas start being expressed publicly, suddenly the people that are thinking this privately find that they're not alone. And they actually have a lot of fellow Ukrainians that are also against Zelensky, despite the complete absence of that sentiment on public airwaves. That makes sense to me, that chain of events. And I wonder how long Zelensky will last. Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky is facing protest across the country after signing a controversial bill on Tuesday that critics say will neuter the independence of two prominent anti-corruption bodies. As Ukrainian and Russian delegations prepare to meet in Istanbul, Turkey for a new round of ceasefire talks, Zelensky and his allies are facing a groundswell of opposition at home. On Tuesday, Zelensky signed a controversial law passed by parliament that will bring the Anti-Corruption Bureau, NABU, and its partner organization, the Specialized Anti-Corruption Prosecutor's Office, under direct control of the Prosecutor General's Office. Both bodies were set up in the aftermath of Ukrainians' pro-Western Maidan revolution in 2014 with the intention of rooting out systemic corruption and helping Kyiv reform its democratic system with an eye on European Union accession, which, of course, is the perverted, distorted way that the mainstream media presents this, when in reality, we know that along with the Western coup into Ukraine came all of the Western corruption. And it was following that coup that you had the likes of Hunter Biden or John Kerry's kid or, you know, any other highly connected progeny of the powers that be here in America going in and getting jobs in gas companies and basically just hijacking Ukraine for their own benefit. So it's a little bit dishonest to say that, you know, this was instituted after the Maidan Revolution to eliminate corruption and, you know, put us on a path towards EU membership. It's like, well, you know, tell that to the Heinzes and the Bidens and everybody else making hundreds of millions of dollars for their corrupt activities in your country. The passing of the new legislation this week prompted protests in Kyiv as in other major cities across Ukraine, with demonstrators even violating the nighttime curfew imposed as a guard against nightly Russian drone and missile strikes. A spokesperson for the European Commission warned the move could undermine Ukraine's potential bid to join the EU. Kyiv's European finding, they added, is conditional on progress on transparency, judicial reform, and democratic government. Of course, they are not, in any sense of the word, a democratic government at any level in Ukraine. The president is not elected. His term expired a long time ago. He's still in office. Any opposition parties are eradicated and their, you know, property stolen by the government. And the anti-Zelensky reporting done by outlets not friendly to the regime have all been forcibly shut down. So I don't know, where is this democracy that you speak of? Where is this democratic activity that I keep hearing about? Because there isn't any. The passage of the bill followed dozens of raids on NABU employees by officers from the Security Service of Ukraine. In the PGO on Monday, officers began inspecting the handling of state secrets at SAPO. Zelensky and his supporters have framed the measures as necessary to root out Russian infiltration and influence within Ukraine's anti-corruption bodies. Because of course it is. Because again, war is an extremely convenient attribute for tyrants. It's not just that there's anti-corruption bodies, or it's not just that there's some organization that you want to do away with. It's that it's the enemy that you're at war with is tricking your people into being against you. So you don't have to listen to them. It's just Russia. Now think about how useful that claim has been here in America, claiming people are associated with Russia in order to, I don't know, spy on them, surveil them, discredit them, whatever. And think about how much more useful it'd be if we were actually in, you know, direct physical conflict with Russia. Again, it's not even worth, you know, arguing whether or not it's true. The fact is, it doesn't have to be, since you essentially have one party rule in Ukraine and opposition is illegal. So they can say whatever they want, do whatever they want, make whatever claims to justify whatever actions they want. And that's the blank check that we've given to Zelensky in the name of democracy. It's absurd. It's hypocritical. It's complete nonsense, but it always has been. So nothing new there. So very interesting to see protests breaking out in Ukraine right around the same time USAID gets its funding officially pulled. I'm going to do one more story before we go out to your calls, because this is a, in my opinion, very important thread, or at least a very important topic and a very good thread from Aesthetica at ANC underscore aesthetics on X. He says, just went through the numbers on tech layoffs, and it's so much worse than you can imagine. 75,000 jobs cut year to date, close to 40% increase year over year from an already sky high number in 2024. Meanwhile, H-1B petitions hit the yearly cap in just 6 months, and 82% of all new tech jobs have gone to foreigners. 82% of all new tech jobs have gone to foreigners, while 75,000 jobs have been cut year over year. Offshoring has hit record highs, with entire shadow economies popping up all over the world, replacing American tech jobs and leading to office closures in America, eerily similar to the wave of manufacturing jobs we sent overseas to China and Mexico that ended up hollowing out our middle class. The great tech replacement is here. Silicon Valley is playing a very dangerous game. Says, I don't think these people realize what they're doing. You might be able to get away with replacing lower paying jobs with foreigners for a period of time. Americans don't really want to do those jobs. But when you take away all the good jobs, give them to foreigners, and remove the possibility of upward mobility for young Americans, you're effing with something you will never be able to take back. And we've seen this over and over again, people sharing their personal story, saying, my husband was part of the layoffs this year. He was a senior engineer at Facebook and Meta for 14 years, literally led the total rewriting of both the FB app and Messenger in his time there. Rockstar code monkey, if you will. The replacement of American senior engineers with cheap entry-level coders will destroy this company. They cannot code at the higher levels, so infrastructure code that is scalable is being degraded into hacked garbage. Shameful. Zuck should be considered anti-American for what he's doing to his U.S. senior engineers, many of whom are legal immigrants. And there's also, of course, the phenomenon of Indian CEOs being put into place and immediately firing huge swaths of the Americans in order to hire their fellow countrymen. This is just like an established pattern in big tech, you know, sort of across the board. You have the story from just about a week ago of Microsoft simultaneously firing, I believe, 9,000 software engineers while applying for 6,000 plus H-1B visas to replace Americans in those jobs. It is a great replacement. It is happening at scale, and it's all completely legal under the current design of our economy. And who is this good for? I guess potentially it's good for the Indians that are coming over. Why the American economic situation should benefit solely foreign people? I guess it's in line with everything else that we do in America, but it's not exactly a way to run a country. And I guess the shareholders can get a slightly larger return by simply betraying their fellow countrymen, destroying their livelihoods, and allowing them to, you know, degrade into obscurity while you bring over a bunch of people with fake diplomas worth less than the paper that they're printed on. So it's just betrayal. It's just treason. It's just there's nothing more sophisticated than that. There's no greater overarching plan that will lead us to better days ahead. It's just destruction, just dismantling the systems by replacing the people that built them. It's really not all that complicated. It just is that senseless and vicious and pathetic and evil. With that, we go out to your calls. Mitch in Wisconsin, thanks so much for calling in and holding for us. You're calling in about the Hunter Biden interview. Go ahead, Mitch, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison, how am I coming through today?
Coming through great. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Harrison, I'm not from Wisconsin, but close enough. You're doing great. You're having a great show. I just wondered if you heard that all gas, no brakes interview with Hunter Biden that just came out. I think it was yesterday.
Yeah. I've heard it. I've got some clips from it. The problem is he cusses a lot, and I didn't ask the crew to censor him, so I haven't played any of the clips just because they're not radio friendly. But yeah, and plus, I mean, I don't even want to give attention to this guy, but he did say some interesting things. What were your thoughts on the interview?
I wondered if you heard that it kind of goes back to that caller earlier talking about overdosing and anxiety. I mean, he's having pity for all these addicts. I'm kind of tired of these addicts crying about, you know, remorse. You know, I understand they're getting attacked by synthetic molecules and everything, and they're so triply addicted. But, I mean, be an American, you know, bear down, you know, realize what's going on, you know, kind of figure out, you know, which way to go.
Yeah. Well, it's just absurd for this Hunter Biden character to act like, you know, he has a right to be mad about anything. Like, that's what I got from the thing. He's like, he's acting like pissed off. He's like, oh, this is ridiculous. It's like, dude, you literally spit paint on a canvas and sell it for millions of dollars. You are the most privileged person that has ever existed in this country. You commit crime after crime. We literally have seen you on tape with sex trafficked, you know, and he gets away with it, and yet he's out there going, oh, this is terrible. It's just like, in any world of justice, you, sir, would be on a prison chain gang breaking rocks for the rest of your life. Shut the hell up. Go away. Unless the only thing you are saying to the American people is, thank you, America. Thank you. Thank you for not giving me what I deserve. Thank you for not doing to me what I've done to everybody else. Thank you, America, for letting me slide by in my rampant, despicable criminality, selling you out for my own gain. Thank you, America. And please just continue the mercy you've shown for me. I don't want to hear him complaining or criticizing anybody ever. The man deserves nothing but a heavy chain and a walk on the plank. But for some reason, he's still at the top, dictating to the rest of us what he thinks the world should be like. Hunter, you are an embarrassment to the world. You are an embarrassment to your family. You're an embarrassment to humankind and America at large. Your very existence has been a blight on this nation. Shut the hell up and go away forever. Hunter, thank you. Sincerely, America. Thanks for the call, Mitch. Let's go to TS in Florida. TS has an interesting take on Trump's strategy here. TS, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison, big fan. You guys are a big inspiration. Yeah, I wanted to give you my take. I think last July, they ran the JFK playbook on Trump, and thank God they failed. And now this July, you know, he got into office. They've got to try to take him out. He's a huge threat. So now I think what they're doing is running the Nixon playbook. You know, Nixon and JFK were both moving into becoming reform presidents, which Trump is, representing the populist movement. And so, you know, the Nixon playbook is three parts. First, there's the setup where they plant evidence or they commit a crime in your name, like Watergate, which he wasn't involved in. Then they try to get you to do the cover-up, break several laws in the process, and eventually through their, you know, official processes, then they go for the takedown and reveal the evidence at the same time. And it's all in a manipulation of public opinion to turn the public against you. I put out a book earlier this year called The Woke Mind Viruses, where I cover all this. But then I think, you know, here's my opinion on what Trump should do. I think Trump is pissed, which is good. I think he should go full Incredible Hulk Trump. I think he should go on a rampage. And, you know, Reagan had his war on drugs. Bush Jr. had the war on terror. You know, we're not huge fans of that. But I think what Trump needs to do is go to war and have a war on government crime and hire 21 U.S. attorneys, call them Trump's 21 hired guns, and have them open up investigations and prosecute all these crimes we've watched publicly these officials get away with. In doing that, he'll expose the deep state. He'll dismantle it through the court of public opinion, the thing they're trying to use against him. He can wield against them, throw them in jail, and he will expose and cripple the globalist movement just by enforcing the law like Bukele and others have done in their countries, solidifying the reforms.
Man,
that's my take on it.
Well, that's a brilliant breakdown. I think you're exactly right about a number of things. I think, again, if we want to look at how this is done, Nayib Bukele he has run the playbook already and shown it successful. And he did very much something very, very similar to what you're suggesting. There's a famous video where he's sitting down with his entire cabinet and he's saying, you are all under investigation. He's saying, if you want to be in my government, you are going to be open to investigation and we're going to be looking into absolutely everything you're doing. And only once we prove that you are clean will you be, you know, allowed to keep your position. Otherwise, you're going down. I think Trump needs to do exactly the same thing. I think you're exactly right. And I think your observation about the way they manipulated Nixon and used as their most powerful weapon public sentiment to destroy Nixon is absolutely on the mark. And you know, this has become a increasingly prevalent topic of conversation as people have looked into Nixon and Watergate and seen how falsified it all was and seen that, you know, Nixon won an absolute landslide, blew the other candidate out of the water. He was just an immensely popular president, and yet they destroyed him within months. And then, of course, it becomes the prevailing narrative where, you know, most people growing up just think of Nixon as a, you know, patent criminal, the worst president in history and all this stuff, when there's just absolutely no evidence to support that view other than this one scandal, which, again, maybe it was a big deal in the 70s. But at this point, when we know what our government has gone to, I mean, Watergate was just nothing, just absolutely nothing compared to
nothing.
Russiagate, for example. I mean, pales in comparison. So, but still, it's that ability to manipulate the public consciousness that gives, you know, the powers that be the ultimate authority in this country. And if they want to oust an incredibly popular president, it's just a matter of getting all the newspapers to align on hating him, and he goes away forever, potentially.
I'll tell you, Harrison, you know, Trump has these powers granted to him by the Constitution. And he, you know, he didn't know about his pardon power until his first term. They discovered it. He started wielding it. Now he's mastered that, right? Mm. But there's another power that he's got that he's not wielding, and that's the prosecutorial power. You know, the president is the number one top cop, number one prosecutor, number one magistrate in the country because he's over the DOJ and the FBI and CIA and everybody. And so he has to wield that prosecutorial power, just like they've been wielding him it against him, blasting him with it. Now he's holding all of the weaponry of government, and he has got to have these U.S. attorneys that are outsiders, not Maureen Comey and these other, you know, deep staters. He needs outsiders to come in. He's got a good start with Ed Martin and Jeanine Pirro, but he's got to get them to open up investigations. You know, I was on with RSBN this week, and I made a bingo card, like an evidence board of all the crimes we know about. You know, I just put 20 of the 40 or so on there. And I put a blue check mark only on one of these crimes, which is Crossfire Hurricane, that he's publicly investigating and announcing. But there's all these other crimes, and the people will love Trump forever. He will solidify his reforms, his legacy. He will be remembered as one of the great, if he goes after government crime.
Yep.
And it's not enough to call it corruption, because corruption could be just something bad they did, but might not be illegal. Got to call it crime. Because the public understands crime is bad and criminals need to be punished. And so it's got to be government. He needs to go and have an official announced war on government crime, empower his DOJ, his 21 guns, and he needs to announce all the investigations that he's opening
and
make
to,
it public.
And he needs to adopt nobody is above the law as the slogan of his presidency. I think if he came out and said, saying make America great again, he came out and said nobody's above the law every time he talked as he's, you know, rounding up and charging these criminals. I think you're exactly right. I think you have a brilliant breakdown of this. I'd like to see that bingo card. Do you have a X account, TS?
I don't have one, but if you look up RSBN interviews TS Dixon, it was this week, I think on Monday, I did that
Dixon.
Whole thing.
Okay.
I have a clip. I can send a clip to your producers if you want. I'd love to come on the show sometime as a guest. I love your show.
That'd be great.
I'd love to talk more about the book.
This call has been great. Tell me, the book is Woke Mind Virus. Where can we get that?
It's called The Woke Mind Viruses. It covers liberalism, leftism, globalism, and wokeism. And you can get it on Amazon or audible.com. We just released the audio book. And it does a full deconstruction breakdown of the four ideologies on the left. And then I give the agenda for how to countermeasures for how to win and reform America and Western countries.
Well, you've got some very good ideas, and I'm certainly interested. I'll probably check out that audiobook, The Woke Mind Viruses. Thank you very much, TS from Florida, TS Dixon. Really, and look, the crew found the bingo card here. The missing kids, the $21 trillion missing dollars, Act Blue, Twitter files, open border. Wow, yeah, no, this is great. Summer love rides, find laptop.
If you wouldn't mind also sharing that with Alex and Owen, That would be awesome. I'd like to get this message out. I want to get this proposal to Trump so he can ramp up. He needs to go Hulk mode. I know he's pissed. He needs to become the Incredible Hulk Trump and go after government crime.
That's great.
He needs to use the prosecutorial power.
The crew should print that out. That's very cool. Thank you very much, T.S. I'd love to talk to you more, but we got one more caller I don't want to leave hanging. So thank you, T.S. I'd love to have you on again soon. But now we go to Noah in Mississippi. Maybe an appropriate name for the topic you're calling for. Noah, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to go back to what that guy, Augustus DiRico, said when he was on with you, because he claimed on Alex's show and on Owen's show that there is no weather modification company that can create a flood like that. And that's a total lie, because I think it was 2 years ago or maybe last year, Dubai was doing geo weather modification and they completely flooded their city.
Right.
I mean, their streets look like rivers.
So I remember that.
Just on its face, not true. I don't know if they were doing the same kind of seeding with the silver iodide. But to say that it can't be done is just patently false.
That's so funny. And, here's the headline from BBC. What is cloud seeding and did it cause the Dubai flooding? So they talk about, these massive floods in Dubai that were caused by rain seeding and that I believe happened when it was like 104 degrees out and should have been perfectly dry. And instead they had massive flooding rainstorms. So you're exactly right. Very good point. Thank you so much for the call. We're coming to the end of our show. I do want to remind you that there are just immense sales going on this weekend or this whole week on thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. Buy one, get one bombshell sale. You buy one, get one free for the methylene blue tincture, the Shilajit gummies, and the CMOS, plus massive discounts all across the store. Go today, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison.
So we had Stuart Rhodes, the founder of Oath Keepers, former J6 political prisoner, constitutional lawyer, so much more on Paratrooper. And he wanted to try methylene blue like so many other guests have done live on air. I got so busy with all the Iran war stuff and the commies rioting to ever get him to take it on air. All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feeling really great, fog lifting, to just over the top crying. It feels so good. Especially the first time you take it. Electrochemical in the mitochondria, cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest ultra methylene blue. But he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended. I forgot to do this. He's like, hey, are we doing methylene blue? So he's going to take it now. But guys, don't forget when he's on Owen, to maybe if he forgets before he's going to go off, to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. I've had like 300 plus people we've given it to. Two people did not feel it. That means your mitochondria is in perfect shape. So Stuart, go ahead and take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people, it hits within about 30 minutes. It starts peaking after a couple hours. But you're going to be on Owen. So please, before you go, just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now? Now that you have your energy spike?
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project, and I was pretty efficient in sleep. Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
That's good. Well, that's probably, I don't know, that might be because you're hanging out with me. So we gotta maybe try it again.
I think it's methylene blue.